is a Muppet?
It's a puppet that moves.
I was trying to set you up for the Simpsons line.
Oh, I don't think I... Do I not know that one?
With Troy McClure?
What is a Muppet? What? I know he was in something with Piggy.
It's not quite a puppet. It's not quite a... We'll have to look that up. Welcome back to Box Office Bylines, a podcast about movies, about journalism, shining a spotlight on all the president's men and broadcasting the news up close and personal. I am Jacob Boone, a journalist in Yellowknife, Northwest Territories, joined as always by...
Tara Thorne, so I'm doink in Halifax.
I hope my headphones weren't still too loud. I think they might have been, but that's okay.
Still on press list, though.
Still on press list. Good for you.
I'm still getting... Yeah, I got somebody's TIFF announcement before they got it. Oh. Like, I congratulated that person, and they said, where did you hear it? And I'm like, the press release.
There you
that
go.
That is a public document.
You're still invited to the VIP parties?
There you go. If not the festival itself.
Con and Sundance.
Oh, yeah.
And
Venice.
All of the...
All the places.
Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm. The Adult Video News Awards.
Because you don't just do film criticism, Tara. You also do some real gonzo journalism.
Oh, gonzo, you say?
Yeah.
Ah.
Right? Puns.
I get confused by who's the Muppets and who's Sesame Street, but they're all the same universe, correct? Yeah, they're all Jim Henson, right?
I mean, they all know each other.
Because there's that one really great Christmas special,
yes,
with all the Fraggles.
Where they
and
all
stuff.
Come together, but
and the Icy Patch.
I don't know if it's like they're interacting outside the holidays.
Like, are they part of the Jim Henson cinematic universe?
But Kermit has a job on Sesame Street. I don't know if he still does. I think that was early in his career. He started as a journalist on Sesame Street, which ties into this movie we're talking about. The Great Muppet Caper, 1981, directed by the man himself, Jim Henson, written by Tom Patchett, Jay Tarsis, and Jerry Jewell, starring...
A lot of people.
Yeah. Starring Kermit the Frog, Fozzie Bear, Ms. Piggy, Gonzo the Great, as well as Dame Diana Rigg, and Charles Grodin, and various other Muppets.
I thought Diana Rigg was Olivia Colman.
Olivia Colman would have been like...
I know.
15?
I was like, oh, is this Olivia Colman's first film appearance? No, it's someone from the Mod Squad. Wait, what was she?
The Avengers she was in.
Avengers. She was Emma Peel. Okay.
And
yeah.
Then...
Diana Rigg. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's the late Diana Rigg, correct? I believe
so. Is she?
So.
I thought she... Did she pass this year?
I think so. I feel like when I looked her up to see if she was Olivia Colman, it said, remembering Diana Rigg.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Damn. Yeah, she was in Game of Thrones recently, too. They
Good
gave
for
her a little role. Great, great actor.
Yeah.
Charles Grodin also died this year. Damn. The Muppet Curse.
This killer movie. Yeah, she died in. She died last fall.
So the human cast of this movie, dead.
It's all dead.
I mean, there's three other, like, sexy model cat burglars.
To be fair, it was made in 1981.
Yeah, sure.
It's not
That's
the
not
Jason Segel reboot.
Anyway, much like last week, in talking about how to lose a guy in 10 days, this is another film about diamonds. Specifically, diamond thievery.
Yeah.
When Dame Diana, I forget her character's name.
Lady Halliday?
Something like that. Her diamonds are stolen in broad daylight, and Kermit and Fozzie, playing two crack investigative journalists and twins, which is a funny joke.
Yes, it is.
And people say that their editor says they look nothing alike, and he's like, that's because Fozzie has his hat on. And Fozzie takes the hat off, and he's like, oh, yeah.
And then he shows a picture of him hanging out with their dad, and I pissed myself laughing. It was so funny.
It
was like a mashup. It was like a bear, but it was green.
I'm sorry. We could go into the plot, but I do really love the Muppets, especially like this period when they were good.
Yeah.
And they were just doing very, like, I don't know, Borscht Belt sort of comedy.
Yeah, they're very, there's nothing to hate there. Like, they're so good-hearted, and they're clever. They're not, yeah. There is some pandering. There's a lot of, like, out-of-control cars in this. There's, like, definitely people that should have died that don't. But it's just, like, funny and smarter than it needed to be for a children's program.
And now they're, like, now the Muppet stuff, I mean, it's all Disney anyways, but I feel like they just make, like, pop culture references. It's very lazily
And they were selling written. some sort of Google Home ripoff that was at the movies all last year.
Back to the plot. So Kermit and Fozzie miss the daylight robbery because their big front page scoop on the day they're hired is a story about how they were hired.
And the editor yells at them about this as if it wouldn't
rightfully.
Be his job. Well, but we'll get it on.
And
we'll
Gonzo. Gonzo is their freelance photographer.
Like, that's right.
They form a trio of journalists. So to make it up to their editor, they, you know, we can get the scoop on these diamonds. Just give us 48 hours type scene from the cantankerous editor. And he allows it, you know.
If you pay our way to London.
Yeah. Which seems unreasonable, except for the fact that the Muppets travel as like cargo. And get tossed out of the plane instead of landing. And so they just land in London in like a pond. Again, that's very funny to me.
It is funny. Even the opening credits where they're like in a hot air balloon for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, what's the deal? What's going on? It's like, oh, this is the opening credits. And it's like meta in a time, like everything's meta now.
Maybe that's what Muppets stand for, meta puppets. Like, they always were a little self-aware in the way that Sesame Street usually isn't, though is kind of in that Christmas special.
Yeah, Sesame Street is very earnest and for, like, young children.
Yeah, and this is more like...
for Bart Simpson.
there are a lot of shots of the Muppets' legs...
Which
I do not enjoy
seeing. Which is always disconcerting.
Yes.
No, it's like when you see Elf's legs. No,
it's not
right.
And they're never that mobile because it's all being done with, like, wires. I don't like that at all. There's way too many, like, shots of Miss Piggy walking.
Yeah.
Because also when they're walking as puppets with a hand up them, they do that fun little, like, bounce walk. But when it's too uncanny valley because you get reminded that they're just weird monsters that are around.
Totally. And when she at the end, she like drives a motorcycle through a window and jumps on
I didn't mind that.
Charles Grodin. And he's clearly just holding a doll and falling.
Yeah.
In slow motion.
Yeah. Like, the Muppet stuff always works best when, even when it is kind of meta and people comment on it, and there's a lot of that in this movie, like, they break that fourth wall constantly. At one point, Kermit and Piggy have, like, an fourth wall breaking, like, argument about their relationship. Like, not in character in the movie, but, like, as Frog and Pig actors.
Yep.
And then they get back to the movie, and that's so odd.
It's very weird, because it's like, you have to shoot all of that, and write it, and plan for it, and puppet it, and it's just a throwaway joke.
It is.
And it could be a 90-minute movie. It could have been.
This was a long, 89, what was it, 100 minutes?
Yeah, it wasn't that long, but it could have been shorter.
Long. I should say, like... the journalism stuff falls away pretty fast.
It
just becomes not even a caper film as much as just like a musical romance.
I love songs, so I'm into that. The
too.
Opening
it's
number
fine.
Is really great. It's a very old-timey Hollywood, like crashing around the soundstage.
Miss Piggy gets a giant number. Musical fountain underwater swimming number.
Have we mentioned that Miss Piggy pretends to be the Diana Rigg and that's...
Right, so yeah, because
so she's tricked Kermit.
She's trying to get like modeling work from this fashion house, and Diana Rigg, you know, very Miss Piggy scene, and Diana Rigg says, "You can answer the phones, great." And then Kermit sneaks in for an interview with the diamond maestro who with Rig, and but Rig's already gone out to lunch or whatever, and Miss Piggy's there, but Miss Piggy's fallen off a step ladder fixing the curtains or something, and bumps her head, and wakes up dreamily to Kermit, which is kind of nice that like he's the like the dream girl babe.
Mm-hmm,
and she's she runs the con trying to like impress him. Fantastic scene where she gives him a fake address of like, what street do you think I live on? And he's like, probably something fancy, like high level street. And she's like, yep, that's it. And so she goes to that address and sneaks in, and there's John Cleese, and I forget the actress's name, as this
and
very...
they have a very long conversation. It's so long. And they're like, do you see that pig climbing up the side of the house? It's like, yeah, I see that.
Yeah.
Like, they're not...
Oh,
they're
it's a good, like, 12 minutes.
It's like. Long. It's super funny.
Great, though. Yeah.
Of her pretending to live in the house, and they kind of go with it. And they give her a dinner recommendation.
And then chase them around. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it's more of a supper club. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Parts of it that are really great. The Charles Grodin is great. It's a little long, frankly. It's also weird sometimes now seeing early Muppets characterizations. Like, none of the rats are have, like, Jersey accents.
Mm. Janice and is in there just like
Janice
the
has
hotel.
A lot of lines.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like they hadn't Scooters still around. You know, the Muppets evolve. It's like when you see early Sesame Street stuff and Elmo has like no lines because he wasn't the breakout star yet. Cookie Monster. Grover was like supposed to be the main character back then.
Right. Or Wiggum has black hair. Whatever.
Sure.
It's just like stuff that's not right yet.
Anyway. Yeah, I don't know. None of the Muppets have English accents. But again, it'd be weird if they did. I don't know. Oh, the cameos. Well, we mentioned John Cleese, Peter Falk, Columbo himself also in this movie for an extended cameo.
Yes.
As a man on the park bench talking to Kermit, who we think is supposed to be, I guess, Columbo, and it turns out, yeah, he's just a bum who's trying to sell fake watches. I really, like, I can understand why Jason Segel would want to remake this, because being in one of these movies must have been so fun. Or being on the Muppet Show.
Yeah. Super fun. Like,
not a lot of thoughts on.
I know. It's like the problem with something good is it's hard to just keep talking about how good it is. It's like, what are we going to do? Shit on the Muppets? And
shit on
alienate them. All of our listenership?
I mean, I do think they kind of suck now.
Well, and there's always that characterization of Miss Piggy of her being an abusive nut job that I didn't feel as much in this one. I guess because she was playing a part, like she was undercover, kind of.
Yeah, so she was like, trying to. She was also trying to win Kermit's heart.
Mm-hmm. I do like when she shows up in the modeling show. What's that called? Fashion show.
Fashion show.
Everyone's like, oh, fashion show lunch. She's like, everyone's just like in love with her instantly. Because I kind of wasn't sure if it was supposed to be a joke that Miss Piggy wanted to be a model. But
is she attractive? London, was that ever like established in universe? Do people think she's like the joke is she's a pig? But do the people in the Muppet universe consider her attractive or consider her weird monster?
Well, there's this scene where I think it's Grodin.
Yeah.
Is basically like telling her about all the women he's tired of and like listing off these kind of standard attributes like long legs, some sort of like statuesque nose. And she goes, yeah, I can see how that would get tiresome or whatever. So it's just like, I don't know.
But sometimes they do play it up. Like, she's usually famous in some way and rich.
Yeah,
where's her money come
confident.
From? She's confident. Has that ever been
Everybody
established?
Everyone eats bacon. Yeah. Bacon will turn vegetarians right back.
Because she's clearly well off.
Mm-hmm.
She comes from means. Maybe she has a famous father. And yet she's slumming it in this dumb, broken theater with this ragtag band of Muppets, presumably because she loves Kermit.
It's because she's in love. And I do like that they call him a lizard. That's funny. I don't know why. It just is. Isn't he a lizard? It's good.
Yeah, good stuff. Oscar the Grouch shows up for a brief cameo.
Yeah. All your faves. It's like the Avengers of 1981.
We reference the Avengers too much.
I don't even like the Avengers.
But you love the Muppets.
Ugh. I don't love them. I just know why people do. Like, I'm watching a Muppet Experience positively at all times. Because why wouldn't you?
I would have enjoyed more journalism.
It has more journalism than Artburn.
Yeah, but that had such a history to it. And I felt like, oh, cool. Like, you know, Kermit in his reporter garb, like in Sesame Street, when he was a man on the street, Frog in the Street reporter. I just assumed that would play into, I mean, they are trying to solve a caper. So I assumed the journalism stuff would naturally, as we've talked about before, allow for some creative, if not lazy, screenwriting solutions to why people are showing up or asking questions at certain times. And it didn't. It really just became a love triangle romance. Which is fine.
Can we talk about the inaccuracies of that opening scene with the excellent, I love a harried, angry editor. I love a harried, angry editor.
Yeah.
And he's going through all the papers and their headlines, and then he yells at and fires Kermit and Fozzie for their bad
headline
and photo. They would not, I'm just saying.
It's like them with their arms around each other.
It's giving the children...
It's like a seven-column headline.
Idea about who does what. If he's the editor-in-chief, that front page isn't getting out. But it's like, it's funny, but it's like, it's not right.
I like to think maybe he had the day off. And the sheer charm of Kermit and Fozzie won over everybody else. In the copy department, in layout. And they're like, you know what? Yeah.
Yeah, this is front page news.
And maybe they hadn't heard about the diamond robbery yet. So it's like, all right, slow day.
They were literally on the street when it happened, I think. Oh, no. They were, because it happened in London.
No, they were for the first one. Because it's like, it was two robberies. There was like the first robbery, and then Grodin steals the necklace, Diana Rigg's necklace, at the supper club where everyone's dancing. And then that's all preamble to... the big giant heist to get the fabulous baseball diamond.
Right. Much like Ocean's 8.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. Or Mission Impossible. Very similar. Aesthetically.
Jacob, why do you think the legs bother us?
I think it breaks what we said. It kind of breaks the real or the false reality a little too much. Like, when the editor's yelling at the frog and the bear, the felt frog and bear, you're with, you believe it because the actor's believing it. But as, I guess when you suddenly, like, put them up against each and you realize they're only 2 feet tall when they're never really, that discrepancy isn't really visible a lot of the time, mostly time when they interact with human beings, the human sitting down, probably just for framing. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's you're like, oh, right, these are 2 foot tall gremlin monster things that no one would actually view. I don't know. I think it's just, yeah, a little unsettling that way. They're also, like, usually oddly proportioned.
Yeah, they're like their little bird legs.
Yeah.
Like, stick straight.
Yeah. Maybe it's just, like, you're seeing part of them that you don't know. It's like when you see The Simpsons, like, straight on. Instead of by profile, it just looks weird.
Yeah.
I don't know. Muppets. That's probably, we should probably take a break. We
can talk trivia. Sounds good.
Sorry, it'll be a short episode, everybody.
There'll be crooks and cops, there'll be villainy. But with us on call, we'll fix it all real easily. Play a movie.
Wow, it's gonna be terrific, starring everybody.
And me.
Now, what we need, guys, is an exciting photo story.
Right this way, young lady. I'll take a picture of this chicken. Mm. Beautiful.
That's great, Gonzo.
Yeah. Smile, cheeky babe. Yes. Do you want to make the front pages or not? Kermit, I got a great picture of the chicken.
Oh, good.
There'll be mystery and catastrophe, but it's all in fun. You pay the money, wait and see.
They are moving.
Welcome back to Box Office Bylines. I am Tara Thorne, co-hosting with my identical twin, Jacob Boone. And we're talking about The Great Muppet Caper.
The Great Muppet Caper.
See, we both have our glasses on, so you can tell we're related. But if one of us took them off, the end.
Then, not at all. Which of the Muppets do you most relate to?
Oh. Do you know your answer? I might need to think. I might need to write to the
screen. Probably Fozzie.
Is Eeyore one?
No. No, he's not.
Yeah, probably Oscar, honestly.
Well, that doesn't really count. That's a Sesame Street Muppet.
It's a Jim Henson character.
Okay. All right.
Okay, fine. I don't know. There aren't many women.
Yeah, there aren't. I guess some of them are like
Janis is
unclear.
Janis Joplin. I'm not going to be like, I think I'm like Janis Joplin.
Yeah. Somebody in the Electric Mayhem, though, you are a musician.
Yeah, maybe.
Dr. Teeth.
Yes, I relate. Let me change my answer. I'm going to go back. Jacob, I relate to Dr. Teeth.
Okay.
Who I believe is Dr. John.
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
All right, so trivia for The Great Muppet Caper.
Great.
There is, as we, I think, mentioned, maybe there's a sequence where all the Muppets are riding bikes in the park, which was accomplished.
You must have hated that
one. Using a combination of radio-controlled bikes, marionette rigging, and in some cases, attaching several bikes together with rods so they could stand upright on their own. The end of the scene where all the Muppets are shown riding off together was done by putting the Muppet characters on their bikes, hooking them together, and pulling them from the actual human bikes that are also in the scene in the front. And Jim Henson's kids were on some of those bikes, pulling his other children.
I bet they wished computers were invented then.
That would would cost
they didn't know
$3 million. And people would have to miss
good.
Like their children's births to animate that nowadays.
It'd be like Gollum.
And this was like, go buy some fishing wire.
Yeah.
And it's done in an afternoon. Anyway. Director Jim Henson did not like the working title for this movie, Muppet Mania. And he had various friends, staff members, and relatives suggest alternate titles, some of which included The Rocky Muppet Picture Show. That's good. A Froggy Day in London. And the winning title was suggested by his 19-year-old daughter, Lisa Henson. It's a bit of a nepotism. Who came up with The Great Muppet Capade, and that got shortened to Muppet Caper.
I mean, I don't know if that's exactly accurate either, but Muppet Mania is definitely not.
Yeah. Anyway. For wide shots of Kermit the Frog, Fozzie Bear, and the Great Gonzo in the hot air balloon that opens the film as they kind of float amongst the opening credits and comment on them. Remote control Muppets and a radio-controlled hot air balloon were used. Jim Henson, Frank Oz, and Dave Goles performed the characters from inside a helicopter, hovering alongside the balloon. It's interesting that they still got them to perform each individual character with remote controls. That's nice, but it almost... You've especially like since they're not the wide doing shot's the voices. So
far, no, and the wide shot's so far away.
Yeah, somebody else could have just.
The close-up looked fake to me. I thought I was like, "Oh, this is sitting on the ground, and there's a blue sky behind them."
Anyway, they were in one helicopter performing. Another helicopter had a cameraman dangling from it, recording the Muppets. During one particularly bad landing, the remote balloon tipped over, spilling out the Muppets and badly scorching Fozzie Bear in the balloon's propane burners.
Oh, no, Fozzie!
Muppet builder Amy Van Gilder came to the rescue and made the necessary repairs, earning her a special on-screen credit of Muppet Doctor.
I saw that.
There you go.
I also noted that it said Muppet Stuff. I like crazy credits, or like, you know, alternate credits.
Yeah. The scene with Kermit the Frog's dancing shadow took 43 takes to get right. David Fincher on set.
Oh, boy. We've done a lot of movies this season that involve planes. It makes no sense. For our little journalism movies. This is the third one, if you count the Stanley Tucci getting murdered in Pelican Brief, which was clearly a helicopter shot.
Oh, like, that, you mean that, like, not planes
like
in
that
the
they're
plot,
using planes.
That they're using planes and helicopters.
Yeah, Capricorn 1 obviously was integral. Yeah. But lots of planes.
State of Play had a lot of aerial shots of D.C.
Mm-hmm.
What else have we done this year? Gilmore Girls had all those helicopter scenes.
Definitely, of Logan rappelling
from
London.
In one scene, Kermit desperately tries to hail a taxi cab and wonders why they aren't stopping. This is because in London you're not supposed to, and technically not allowed to yell taxi. You're supposed to put your arm out towards an approaching cab, and they will pull over, provided they aren't already hired. There you go. At the Happiness Hotel, the sort of rundown hostel where all of the Kermit and Fozzie stay while in London, and coincidentally, of course, all of the other Muppets are there. And presumably because this is a movie the Muppets are in, like a meta movie the Muppets are making within the Muppet universe, that's why they don't know each other already. Anyway, when they arrive, Beauregard... No, sorry. They're told when they arrive there's no kitchen or food, and then later when Beauregard, the New York taxi driver, brings them through the lobby, Swedish Chef comes out of the kitchen with food. Which is it, Muppets?
Which is
kitchen
it?
Kitchen and food or none?
Yeah, that joke didn't work for me where it's like, this guy can't drive, and then he's like, how do I get out of here? And they're like, pull a U-turn, and he just drives through the building.
Yeah.
I didn't think that if that whole sequence was to set up the Swedish Chef appearing.
You know what I didn't like? They do an extended joke with the fabulous baseball diamond at the end where they're like playing a literal game of baseball with it to keep it away from Charles Grodin and his sexy like thieves. And so they're like commenting and saying baseball stuff. And they have that Muppet. I don't know his name, but the one that throws the boomerang fish and then the fish come back to him. And he never, like, says his line, because I don't think that part of his character was developed yet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's one of my favorite guys. the song, The First Time It Happens, by Joe Raposo, in this film, was nominated for Best Original Song at the Academy Awards.
I can see that.
This movie was also shot back-to-back with The Dark Crystal for budgetary purposes, so that the London and New York Henson Puppet Workshops could be working at the same time, building... stuff for each.
I know people have a fondness for The Dark Crystal. I saw it, I think, too young, and it's scary, and I hate it.
Yeah, it's a little scary. It's fine. There's some scary Muppet stuff. Henson's was good at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have, I can criticize the Muppets these days and some other things, but Jim Henson, wow. Creative, brilliant artist. Diana Rigg signed on to the movie because of her 4-year-old daughter, who was, in her words, passionately in love with Miss Piggy. She later...
How progressive for the time.
...told the AV Club that when the daughter Rachel visited the set, she burst into tears when she saw Miss Piggy. Part of that apparently was because the Miss Piggy puppet she saw was one of the, like, giant versions they sometimes had to use. The swimming sequence that we mentioned called for nearly 40 interchangeable Miss Piggy heads and several different bodies.
I bet. They get wet real fast.
They do get wet very fast. It also needed a custom-made heated pool measuring 50 by 80 feet, on a soundstage, and puppeteer Frank Oz had to do 3 days of scuba training. He said he was underwater for close to a week.
Wow. What a life.
They don't make those kind of movies anymore. They don't make those pictures anymore.
They don't
Tara.
Heat a pool. They don't heat a pool and they put don't Frank heat a Oz pool underwater and... for a week. We just get the water filter out and slap it on.
And last little bit, just thought it worth commenting on. When Charles Grodin died this year, it brought a lot of attention back to The Great Muppet Caper and his performance in it. So a quote from Matthew Desham in Slate, who wrote, "Hollywood is going to continue making movies, they say, and birds will continue to sing, and spring will continue to be lovely, and jewel thieves will continue to fall head over heels for pigs who are working as receptionists at posh British houses of fashion while attempting to launch their modeling careers. But a light has been extinguished, a greatness has gone out of the world, and it's fair to wonder if any other actor will ever embody pure, untamed desire for Miss Piggy the way Charles Grodin did."
Very nice.
You truly believe a man will love a pig. Nicolas Cage, that's sort of a, he's in that new movie.
That's right, Pig.
Maybe he'll prove Desim wrong here. Anyway, that's all I got, Tara, on the Muppets.
Well, Jacob.
What do you think they'd be up to now? Do you think they'd still be in journalism?
Yeah, it's hard to imagine them pivoting to video. They would have become like guest lecturers or like Slate opinion columnists or something.
Kermit would be like an editor emeritus who writes cringy opinion pieces about where the culture is going.
Rex Murphy.
He would be, all wrinkled. They kind of look alike. And I don't want to see Rex Murphy's legs either.
Yeah, Fozzie would have gotten out, I think.
Fozzie would be...
He's too pure.
Fozzie would either have, like, an HBO drama starring a fictional version of himself. Or he'd have gotten, like, really into steroids and MMA and just go full Joe Rogan.
Yeah. There are two paths.
Mm-hmm. Gonzo would be dead. And Miss Piggy would be still fantastic. She would have like a second life. Everyone would love her on Twitter.
Oh yeah, she'd be like resurrected. Like I don't even know who. Catherine O'Hara.
There you go. Pig shits creek. cool. Anything else? Any final thoughts, Tara? Should we wrap this up?
I think we should wrap it up. You can follow the show at Box Bylines. Have you seen an increase in journalism movie tweets, or are they just, are you just happen to find them all?
I'm just out there searching, hunting them down.
Yeah.
Hitting that retweet button, driving up the engagement.
The QT button.
They can follow you at ThornyHFX, and they can find me at RWJ Boone. And we'll be back next week with another guest and sort of, I believe, a man being puppeted this time instead of a man puppeting a puppet, a Muppet. We'll leave it at that.
Leave it on a cliffhanger.
Till next time, Tara. Good night, Crawler. Good morning, Glory. And good luck.
Bye, Jacob.
Bye.